Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more. And Late Show Poncho listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
Jump into the epic world of Avatar: The Last Airbender
with Nickelodeon's official companion podcast, Avatar: Brave and the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Listen to Avatar: Brave and the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome. Welcome, one and all, my fellow Americans, to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. It is day three. Is this just three? Because Wednesday was off. So it's just day three of the hush money trial here in New York, New York, the city that never sleeps, unless you're Donald Trump in a courtroom. They're still in the process of jury selection, and in that process, the defense and the prosecution, by New York law, have a limited number of jurors they can strike without cause, which came as news to Donald Trump, who yesterday truthed, "I thought strikes were supposed to be unlimited." When we were picking our jury, yes, strikes famously unlimited. That's why umpires yell, "Strike three, you're at the start of a beautiful journey." Because it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We'll be right back. 7. I think he's mixing up strikes with unlimited breadsticks. They had a really productive day today. Matter of fact, right before I came out here to do the show, we learned that a full jury has now been picked for Donald Trump's New York trial. Plus, one alternate has been seated, too. So 13, also known as a Stormy Dozen. Now, this doesn't mean they're done, right? They're not done yet because they still need 5 more alternates, and they could still lose the jurors that they've got. Because remember, when we went to bed last night, there were 7 confirmed jurors. Then this morning, that number went down to 6, then down to 5. 5 jurors confirmed on the case, 5 jurors confirmed. Take one down, threaten his family, 4 jurors confirmed on the case. So, why? Why were they removed? I'm not entirely sure, but juror number 2 told the judge that people in her life had figured out she'd been selected, and then it started to try to influence her. That frustrated Judge Merchan, who admonished the press for reporting juror descriptions and gave this example. There was really no need to mention that one of the jurors had an Irish accent. That's true. That little detail allowed me to positively identify him as the Lucky Charms guy. They're after me home address. So the judge says now we're no longer allowed to mention anything about what the jurors look like, but he did not say anything about hobbies. According to the New York Times, there are a lot of hikers in the jury pool, someone who enjoys woodworking and someone else who likes fly fishing. Oh, I love the fly fishing in Manhattan. I mean, I get up at 5 a.m. when the light's just right. I head out to the large puddle on the corner of 38th and 10th and just... 10 and 2. Yesterday, I caught a Band-Aid this big. Threw it back, obviously. Now, while he was in New York, Trump took some time off from the courtroom to pretend to be president again. Because yesterday, he met with Polish President Andrzej Duda, who is sucking up to Trump. Duda. Duda. That's right. That's right. How long did they meet? Oh, all the Duda day? You gotta find your fun where you can these days, folks. Duda is just the latest in a series of strongmen who have visited Trump recently. Earlier this year, Trump met with the right-wing populist president of Argentina, Javier Milei, as well as Hungary's Viktor Orban. And who can forget this very cordial summit with Skeletor and the ghost of Jeffrey Epstein? I was never on that airplane! Skeletor doesn't want to be associated with Jeffrey.
Right.
This is yet another reminder that in this election, our democracy is on the line. which is why pollsters are asking voters the critical questions like, do Americans think Trump or Biden would win a hot dog eating contest? Personally, I don't know, but I think we just found a great new debate format. I'm Wolf Blitzer. Our first question is for President Biden. Sir, given the escalating crisis in the Middle East, would you rather fart out of your mouth or talk out of your butt? Could I take that one, Wolf? The results of the poll are as unsettling as the contents of a hot dog. 58% backed Trump in the dog down, while only 13% went Biden. Now, in the middle of a stressful court case, this must be so comforting news for Trump. Mr. President, there's going to be weeks of humiliating testimony about your sexual infidelity, but I wanted you to know you did just win a poll saying you could swallow much more pureed hog anus. Now, it wasn't... Really? Okay. Hog anus rarely gets applause. It wasn't just... No! For the love of God, do not come down to my level. It wasn't just vital questions about ingesting processed meats. This poll got answers on other major issues, such as Trump would beat Biden at having a poker face. Oh, yes, he is a master of deception. A lot of people are saying I have the perfect hand. They're saying it's a queen, a seven, a four, a two of clubs, and a holographic Squirtle Pokemon card. All in. In another big win for the ex-president, pollsters determined that Trump would have a significant lead over Biden when it comes to fighting a medium-sized dog. I'd believe that.
Yeah.
We already know he can dominate a lap dog because I've seen him with Lindsey Graham.
Oh!
Really? Lindsey Graham fans. Biden did come out on top in three categories. Teaching a beginner's cooking class, house-sitting for a long weekend, and changing a baby's diaper. Kind of tells you everything you need to know about this election. Well, I trust Biden with all the tasks that require care and empathy, but I'm going to go with the guy who could body slam a poodle through a picnic table. Those polls show just how detached from reality the 2024 election has become. But with an unhinged opponent, all Biden has to do is go out there and make normal, relatable statements. Unfortunately, yesterday he claimed, cannibals ate my uncle. Okay. That's either a very unusual story or another one of Biden's folksy phrases. Like, I guess I woke up on the wrong side of cannibals eating my uncle this morning. Well, you know, you can't make an omelet without a cannibal eating my uncle. This has to be a misquote, right? I mean, the president of the United States certainly would never go out on camera and tell a long, mumbly story about his actual uncle being devoured by cannibals in World War II, right?
My Uncle Bosie, he became an Army Air Corps before the Air Force came along. And he got shot down in New Guinea. And they never found the body because there were a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea.
That is a crazy and tragic story. Though if true, it is hard to blame the people of New Guinea for turning cannibal because there is so little meat on their country's pigs. Now, turning...
Thank you very much.
Turning to international news, an Australian man took the largest pumpkin grown in the country this year and paddled it down a river. Take a look. Here he comes, and... Yes? Oh, hell yeah. There he is. I have officially found the coolest guy in Australia. Sorry, the Wiggles. As far as why he rode his pumpkin down the river, the man said his only real motive was to have fun and make people smile. Well, yeah. We kind of assumed that. Can you imagine if his motive had been literally anything else? I'm trying to find my daughter who's been taken. I have a very particular set of skills. Unfortunately, they are finding, carving, and rowing pumpkins. She's a goner. Here's something I rarely say. There's interesting news from Connecticut, where two vultures that were feared to be dying were, in fact, just too drunk to fly. But the vultures did the right thing. Instead of flying drunk, they called a Ubered. I like in the graphic. Go back to the graphic. Jimmy, I understand the vulture hailing the Ubered, but there's a vulture driving it, too. That doesn't seem safer. The staff at a local bird sanctuary discovered the vultures were unable to balance or stand and determined the birds were drunk after they ran every test. I would love to see those tests. All right, touch your beak with your wings. All right, now recite the alphabet backwards. Gah! Okay, you're drunk. Now, rescuers determined that the vultures had consumed something that was fermented enough to cause severe intoxication after dumpster diving, to which Rudy Giuliani said, "Thanks for swinging by, fellas." Thanks. My Rudy is close to a Jimmy Durante at this point. Ha-cha. The vultures have finally recovered, rescuer said. They only needed fluids to be tucked in overnight, then fed a big breakfast the next day. Answering the question that has plagued ornithologists for years. What do you do with a drunken vulture? What do you do with a drunken vulture? What do you do with a drunken vulture? Feed them a big breakfast. We got a great show for you tonight.
Coming up, Sandra Oh.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody. Folks, my first guest tonight is an actor you know from Grey's Anatomy, Killing Eve, and The Chair. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Sandra Oh.
Live audience.
Live audiences are lovely.
Live audiences are the best.
It's lovely to see you. We don't see you nearly enough, but you're not in New York nearly enough. But people know you from the TVs and from the movies, but you're here in town off Broadway.
Yes,
right now.
To do a live show. I'm here. We just started rehearsals like this week. I'm on like my third day, but I'm doing a play at the Atlantic Theater called The Welkin, written by Lucy Kirkwood and directed by Sarah Benson. And it's going to preview in late May and open in June. Please come. You gotta come.
Oh, sure. I would love to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd love to. Theater is a totally different beast,
yes, sir.
You know, because it's one continuous performance for an audience. What is the feeling like different for you as a performer to do that as opposed to the stop and start of TV and film?
Well, it's just like this. Honestly, when I walked on stage, I feel you, right? And that kind of dynamic, it informs everything and it propels everything. Whether it is a drama or comedy, it just energizes you. And it's just like, I'm sure this is why you do it too. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's one of the big reasons I took the gig is to be with
it's
a live
audience.
Yeah.
It's great. It's fantastic. Yeah. Well,
there's you, there's the audience, but there's another character in any New York space, and that's the city itself. How do you like living in New York and do you get to walk to work?
Oh, my God. This is the dream. Okay, so this is the dream. So just picture me here. I'm like 8 years old. I'm in a small town in Canada, right? And all right, Canadians. And all I want to do, I never really thought that I didn't know what Los Angeles was. I didn't really care about television or film. Mm-hmm. All I wanted to do was be in New York and be a theater actor. So like coming up the subway and I have my lunch and I feel so good walking to rehearsal. It's great. It's the dream. I love it.
What are we making for lunch? What are we packing?
Okay. You want to know?
Because
I always have my yogurt, my non-dairy yogurt, and then I always have peppers, maybe a papaya.
Like sliced peppers?
Yeah, sliced peppers.
Sounds very healthy.
No. Yeah, you have to. I'm obsessed with eating like all the time because, and it has to be healthy because you're using your brain, and also all the feelings are going on, and you're burning a lot of energy.
The instrument?
yes.
I went to theater school.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes,
the
you did.
Instrument.
Yes, you did.
The instrument, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we're on Canada here for a second. Can I ask you a question about y'all?
What?
Because I'm from the South, okay?
Yes.
And people think we're polite.
Yes, you
but
are.
But we're really passive aggressive.
Oh.
Because we say things like, bless your heart,
or
I'll pray for you, or something like that.
Yes.
Canadians have this reputation as being really nice. Are they actually really nice?
Yes, we are. Right? We are. But no one can say sorry quite like a Canadian. And to make it mean like many, many things, which is like, oh, sorry. Which is like, I hate what you just did, but I'm not going to say anything. That's kind of like a sorry.
That's passive aggressive.
Yeah, maybe passive aggressive.
That's bless your heart.
But that's like a real character thing. I think that we really are like that.
Well, I like you guys.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
We're likable
people. You're okay
people.
With me. I say we don't build the wall.
Oh, but.
Okay. You trained. You went to theater school as well.
I did. I went to theater school.
She skis easily beneath the ceiling of stars. Do you remember any of the stuff?
Two toads totally tied trying to talk to Tisdale. Illuminating aluminum.
Amidst the mist with fiercest frost and barest wrists and stoutest boasts, he thrusts his piss.
thrusts
his fist against the post and still insists he sees the ghosts.
That's fantastic.
You like that one?
Did you just call that up?
Yeah, I just made it up, baby.
No, you don't.
Just do it. Yeah. But
at theater school.
Theater school. In Montreal, was it seulement en français, or were you allowed to do it in English?
Yeah, it's the National Theatre School, so it was half in French, half in English. I was in the English department.
Okay, you didn't have to, they didn't make you do stuff in French.
No, but it was great, you know, living in Montreal. I don't know if anyone is familiar with Montreal. It's one of the best Canadian cities.
Beautiful city.
Yeah, it is. And so to be exposed to, you know, the Quebecois culture, it was great. Yeah.
The reason I asked about the French is that I was threatened with arrest in Montreal.
You were?
For the Montreal Theatre Festival. I was up there for the Fringe of the Montreal Theatre Festival.
Oh.
And I was putting up posters for our play all around Montreal, and they were in English.
Oh, really? And they were like, no.
Because they had to be both in English and French.
That's true.
And they were only in English. And
wow.
The policeman followed me around the city and saw that I took everyone down.
Are you serious?
I guess there's no other crime.
No, well... Also, that is quite Quebecois.
Very Quebecois.
That is very quite Quebecois.
When you were up in Canada, did you... I understand you did clown training?
Oh, no, for sure. You must have done that too, right?
I did not do clown training.
Oh, you didn't? We did a lot of mask training, and we did a lot of clown, you know what I mean? And
I know, like, there's, like, red-nosed clown and white-faced clown.
Yes, absolutely.
And which one were you?
No, I did... we did red nose. We did red nose. And actually, that was one of the little tools I used for... I did this comedy with Awkwafina called Quiz Lady. And so in my training for it, like, as I was trying to figure out the character, because it's such broad comedy, and I'm like, okay, I got to figure out how I wanted to do it, I asked a friend of mine who teaches clown, will you help me with the nose to try and figure out the broad reaches of the character?
Mm.
But like
you rehearsed with the clown nose.
No, yeah. So you basically rehearse and you kind of just go as far as you can go. You know, I don't know if you guys know. So basically in like red nose training, you're up on stage and then your teacher is the director and they'll just ask you simple things to do. It's like, you know, move that piece of paper. Okay, my clown, all she did was cry. All I did was cry. So you don't know what is going to come, but also, you know, it would be like, move that piece of paper. but like
it.
Weeping.
I love
weeping,
it.
Weeping.
I love it. Yeah, that's funny to me. Yeah. But is this the same thing? Is this the same project you did this for?
Yes, yes.
So this is you and Awkwafina and the great Paul Rubens right there.
The great Paul.
You may know him.
Yes.
As Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah. That was our first day of shooting.
First day of shooting. Dude, were you friends with Paul?
Yes. You know, Jen D'Angelo, our writer, she wrote this whole part that had to do with Paul. And I remember thinking, do we have Paul? Did Paul agree to this? And then it was like, okay, I guess I'll just text Paul and say, Paul, can I send you something? Is that okay? And You know, he was just so great. He read it immediately. He said, sure, I'll come and play. He came and played to play the first day. And it was such an honor and a privilege to have him on our film. And, I mean, he was just so great.
And I understand that was the last thing he did.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so...
We have to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Sandra Oh, everybody.
Hi, I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein.
And we want to tell you about Calm the F*** Down, a guided meditation series from the Oversharing Podcast. This is something we've been planning for a long time. It's our most requested segment from the podcast. And these meditations are going to be between 5 and 10 minutes. They're going to be super quick because we don't have a lot of time. You're going to be so surprised how 5 to 10 minutes of really thoughtful meditations can transform your whole life. In addition to the first 4 meditations available at launch, we'll be doing 2 new meditations every single month. Plus, for the fans of Oversharing Podcast out there, you'll also get ad-free versions of every episode of the Oversharing Podcast.
So if somebody wants to become a subscriber, how do they join?
It's so easy. You just go to subscribe.betches.com and sign up now for only $4.99 a month. Or you can lock in our discounted rate if you sign up for the whole year. That's subscribe.betches.com. Or if you're in the Apple Podcasts app, you can just hit the subscribe button now and sign up in the app. It's as easy as that.
Hey, everybody. We're back with the star of The Sympathizer on HBO, Sandra Oh. Now, you just announced that you're in an upcoming comedy. It's called Good Fortune with Aziz Ansari, Seth Rogen, Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
So you've done spy thrillers.
Yes.
You've done dramas. What do you like about comedy? And you don't actually have to like anything. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
No, it's
this could
like,
just be for a paycheck.
No. No, it isn't. Comedy gets through, I think, the quickest. Comedy
it's working.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
And it's the equalizer. You know, there are certain things of drama that might work for some people, but I think comedy works for everybody. And it's just I think the clearest way in for you to not only entertain but to break people's hearts. Like right on the edge of comedy is tragedy. You know, so even let's say with the clown thing, right, or thing with mask and like that, it's I like the broad parts of it because things like broad comedy, like sci-fi, like big sci-fi or like big like fantasy, you're working on these real large edge, like archetypal edges.
You're making big choices.
Yeah, big choices, but I think that it goes into a very, very deep place that has to do with a primordial kind of sense of storytelling. You don't know why from so far away that someone with a mask, when they turn this way, it makes you weep. But I really think it does. Yeah.
I agree. Now you're in an HBO miniseries called The Sympathizer,
yes.
Which is based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning book by the same name. Were you familiar with the book before you did the project?
No, I wasn't. But the showrunner, Don McKellar, he's Canadian, fellow Canadian, and a collaborator of mine. I've done like lots of projects, so, you know.
For people who haven't read it, what's it about?
Oh, so The Sympathizer is like a political spy thriller, and it follows this character called The Captain, who is a Vietnamese communist spy right after the war in Vietnam, through his exile as a refugee in Los Angeles. Yeah.
And we have a clip right here. Do you need to set this up?
Oh, no, let's just
watch it. You guys are in bed.
Well, yes.
Anything else we need to know?
No.
My
character is very much revealed, yes.
All right. Jim?
I think I'm falling in love with you.
You sneak? You stole my confession. Listen. If we get involved...
Aren't we already involved?
Emotionally involved. You and I are... I'm 46 years old. I've done things my way my whole life. I am not about to change now. Fall in love at your peril. Because the only kind of love I believe in is free love. In other words, this love is free.
Said that to me. Sandra, lovely to see you. Thank you for being here. New episodes of The Sympathizer air Sundays on HBO. It's Sandra Oh, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcast.